Welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, the show designed to help make middle age your prime time of life by defying the notion that once you reach 40, 50, or even 60 years old, your crowning achievements are all behind you. Regardless of whether you're just approaching 40 or are firmly entrenched in your middle years, it's time to launch your very own personal journey toward a joyful and purpose-filled second half of life. Each week, host Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, will discuss the challenges common to middle age and help guide you to a brighter tomorrow. Now, here's Roy.
So often we blame others or circumstances beyond our control, but in fact, most of our problems, our bad habits and negative attitudes, stem back to three unexpressed emotions: sadness, anger, and fear. Acclaimed psychotherapist, author, and workshop leader Jude Bijou tells us these three emotions are just pure energy. If we move this energy out of our bodies, it passes and calmness and clarity are restored naturally, physically, and constructively. And here's how. Deal with sadness like little children do by crying. Sob, wail, shed tears, release your sorrow by letting it out. One warning, crying while you entertain bad thoughts about yourself won't help. You've got to cry constructively. And if you must think, keep it positive. I'm doing the best I can. Like a child, it's okay to sob and bawl, but afterwards return to your happy, curious, and loving self. And anger is our body's natural reaction to injustices and violations. Express anger in a constructive way. Stomp, pound, and yell without harming another or destroying anything of value. Then repeat 1,000 times, people and things are the way they are, not the way I want them to be. And fear is a natural reaction to any threat to our survival or well-being, real or imagined. And to release it, act like a scared dog at the vet. Allow your body to shiver, quiver, shudder, tremble, or quake. What it takes, what it wants to do naturally, so you can restore calm and bring your mind back to the present moment. And then live in that moment and stay specific. And once fear is released, you can move on to positive problem solving and full engagement in life. And to learn more about getting a grip on your emotions, I recommend Jude Bijou's outstanding book, Attitude Reconstruction, A Blueprint for Building a Better Life. And to preview and purchase it, go to Amazon, BarnesandNoble.com, or Jude's website, AttitudeReconstruction.com. In fact, go to her website to buy the book, learn something about every imaginable topic, or sign up for her newsletter. Her book is also available at Amazon in paperback or electronic download. And once again, Jude's website is AttitudeReconstruction.com. It's August and autumn is just around the corner. Are you ready to take charge, seize the momentum, and make positive change happen this fall? If not, what's holding you back? As so many of us know, at middle age, it's all too easy to lose direction, to give up on youthful dreams, life goals, sense of adventure, and the simple joy of living. Like me, around age 40, perhaps even sooner, did you begin to lose sight of what's possible, what you're capable of? Have you begun to ask yourself questions like, is my life today all that there is? What is my purpose in being alive? Why am I here? Or when will I be truly happy? Do you feel like you're missing out on the joy of living because you're stuck in a job you don't like, or maybe in a marriage gone sour? Perhaps it feels like life is unfair and the world is stacked against you. And if at midlife you're less than happy, energetic, and fully engaged, what's stopping you from taking action, starting right now? Why aren't you moving heaven and earth to change circumstances and to bring a sense of purpose and joy back into your life? Are you ready to transform yourself into the person you were wonderfully created to be? Well, perhaps you need a bit of help to overcome that negative little voice of fear inside that keeps reminding you that real and lasting transformation just isn't possible. And if so, today I have a wonderful gift for you, a genuine Picasso. And I'm not talking about a painting from Pablo Picasso. Instead, I'm ready to introduce you to an inspirational life coach and author, the unstoppable Frankie Picasso. And her stated mission is to help you transform yourself into the wonderful person you really are, step by step. And Frankie Picasso specializes in accomplishing the impossible, and she demonstrated her ability to do so when she overcame a near-fatal motorcycle accident in 2003. And she's a professional certified metaphysical master hypnotherapist, spiritual counselor, master coach, trainer, and energy healer. And she's self-help author of the bestseller Midlife Mojo, How to Get Through the Midlife Crisis and Emerge as Your True Self. And she's founder and host of the socially conscious Good News Radio Network and a human rights activist. And by the way, she's also an artist and painter and was the world's first female kickboxing promoter. And hello, Frankie, you truly are a versatile, one-of-a-kind Renaissance woman. And welcome.
Oh, my gosh, Roy. Thank you so much for that introduction. That's amazing. Wow.
Well, you're pretty amazing.
It was the Good Radio Network, not the Good News. Somebody else has a Good News, I think, somewhere else, but the Good Radio.
Oh, I see. I'm sorry.
Thank you so much.
Okay, to begin, tell us a little about your traumatic 2003 motorcycle crash and how that... For so many of us, that could have served as a built-in excuse for bitter lifelong dependency. But after near death and 5.5 months in a hospital, what inspired you to get off the mat and become the life coach you are today?
Really good question. Well, in 2003, as Roy mentioned, I had a motorcycle accident. My motorcycle was named Mercury, and I guess she was my midlife crisis at the time. And I got her, and I babied her, and I decked her out in custom chrome, and just beautiful. She was lovely, and she even had purple LEDs that ran around her at night and lit her off. She was pretty stunning. I was leading a motorcycle ride. I belonged to 3 motorcycle clubs at the time, and I was leading the ride that evening of the accident, and we were on a country highway and having a really nice ride, and somebody just ran a stop sign and T-boned me. And literally all I saw was a blur of red coming at me. There was no signage that there was an intersection where he had come from, because it was just a little dirt road, I guess, that he was on, going north as we were going west. And it literally changed my life. It really did. I don't remember really the flight, but I did go up in the air and land pretty hard on the ground. I landed on the side of the road in the gravel. And for a few minutes there, it was just, you know, wow, what happened to me? And then just all heck broke loose, and the pain, like jumping jacks everywhere throughout my body. And little did I know that I had an open fracture of my left femur and tibia, and I'd broken my right femur as well, and my hip and my pelvis. And just about everything below my waist. So it was, I was very, very lucky to survive that.
But I like how you point out, I don't remember if it was in your book or on your website, your estranged husband offered to move back in, or let you move back in and help out with the kids, but you refused, and that was kind of like a turning point in your life where you were convinced that despite all the terrible traumas and problems you faced, you were going to do it on your own, and you're going to do it your way.
Well, it's not as much doing it my way as just doing it. 8 days prior, I had gone for a legal separation, and my husband really didn't want to leave, and not because he was in love. He just didn't want to, he didn't like change. And like,
the convenience
don't like
of the thing.
and he was abusive, and he was an alcoholic, and he was the worst thing for my kids, and he was my second husband. He wasn't their father. Yes, he came to me after I'd woken up from the surgery when they just repaired my legs, and he said, you know, I'll stay and I'll forgive you all your transgressions and whatnot. And I said, well, first of all, there's nothing for you to forgive, but no. The only thing I did not break in it was my head, and I'm not interested. And so
that really took guts. I mean, in a circumstance like you were in right then. all that hospital.
You know what? Maybe I was crazy. It's interesting that you mentioned that particular episode because about a year, 2 years probably, no, about a year and a half after the accident, a friend of mine asked me to come to the emergency at another hospital and to meet the husband of a woman who had been a snowmobile racer. And the track had come off her motorcycle, or off her snowmobile, and her injuries were very, very similar to mine. And so he wanted to show this husband that, you know, there's life after this accident, and his wife will, you know, come back to him and be okay. And he said to me, that was what he said to me, how did you do that without a man? You know, how did you do this without a man? I'm like, just like women do anything.
We can do whatever you guys can, right?
Yeah, you know, I mean, obviously the only thing I really, really worried about was my children, but I felt that they were better off without him there than with him,
right.
And they certainly felt the same. So onward, you know, onward we go.
Well, what is this midlife crisis we so often hear about? And is it is general dissatisfaction with the way things are really a negative crisis point, or should it be viewed as a positive wake-up call, maybe a challenge to discover our own unique path and reason for being here?
Yeah, I think it's the latter. I think that what came to me through the struggles of really losing everything that I had in the hospital and you know, all the things that I felt defined me as a human being, that I came to realize that this is really, midlife is the metamorphosis that happens to us. And it's kind of, like you said, that wake-up call where the universe is trying to knock on our door and say, hey, you know, let's shed this socialized self that has been so bred into you from, you know, the moment you're born, and schools and societies telling you how to be and who to act and how to act and what it's going to look like.
And what you aren't and what you aren't.
Yeah, exactly, what you aren't.
What your limits are.
Yeah, exactly. And let's shed that skin and see and become that person that you truly were meant to be. And it's interesting because when you look back and you think, yeah, you know what, I've lived 40, 50, 60 years, I potentially have another 30 or 40 even to live forward.
Yeah.
Do I really want to be that same suppressed, bored person?
Yeah.
Or is it time for me to be who it is I'm supposed to be? I truly believe that we come here with a purpose. I truly believe that we, each of us, can wake up to that purpose and be that person we were meant to be. And it's so interesting and so timely because yesterday I was speaking to a gentleman who is 60, and he said, you know, I've got 18 months left in the job. I hate my job, you know, but it's really good money. But I hate my job, you know, but really good money. Should I stay? And, you know, I mean, it really does depend on what your values are and what your values
are. 18 months, maybe, even if it's bad, he could tough it out. But
I said, you know, if your income is going to take a dramatic hit by you leaving today, you know, would you stay the 18 months? Or is it that bad that really at some point in our lives, money means nothing compared to happiness? The real
question, I think, is if and when you quit, what are you going to do next?
And that's what I said. Do you know what you want? No, I don't know what I want to do. Okay. Well, you know, this is where the coach comes in, and we help people kind of figure that out. But even not knowing is better than staying someplace where you can't breathe anymore.
No, that's for sure. But,
because sometimes you really just got to get away from all of that and find out, you know, what's going on and who you are. Usually the clues are in childhood. I said, you know, I can spend hours on Photoshop. I can, you know, I like to draw. I like to paint. I like to do things artistic and creative. Well, there's a big clue, you know, especially for somebody who's working, you know, in the financial sector. That doesn't sound like fun if you're this other person.
That's
creative,
so true. You often can go back to clues like that, and I have a whole chapter in my book about taking a vacation, mental vacation, to find your vocation, you know, to really ask those kind of
questions. I love that. You know, when I was 9 years old, I sent away for the National Institute of Broadcasting records on how to be, you know, a disc jockey on the radio. And, yeah, I always wanted to be on the radio. And I guess about 7 years ago, one of my students, eventually became a coaching teacher, and one of my students said to me, hey, would you like to, you know, co-host with me or co-own with me a radio station for coaches?
Yeah.
And I'm like, heck yeah. You know, that's all I ever wanted to do was be on the radio. And so it began, you know, the journey began. But there we went back to my childhood and what it was that I really wanted to do. And that was, you know, interact with people in a meaningful way,
yeah,
and as many as possible. And I thought, gee, you know, radio can do that.
Well, we often hear stories of individuals of middle age, most often men, but I guess women do it too, who certainly go like middle age crazy, they call it,
yeah,
have an affair, leave their husband and children, quit their job, buy a new wardrobe. Maybe they don't do all these things, maybe a sports car. And charge off to a new beginning. In your experience as a life coach, have you encountered many individuals who radically alter their lives and abandon existing career and relationships and accomplish sustained happiness? Or that seems like an awful radical thing to do. Can't we accomplish true happiness in life, hopefully, without making that drastic change, I guess?
Yeah. Well, it sounds horrible and it sounds selfish, but I tell you, the reason that people do that, and yes, I've encountered that many times, is because change happens best in chaos. When we're comfortable, it doesn't happen.
That's
why would we
point.
Get out of that lazy boy? There's no reason. But when we're forced to, you know, when life comes at us and forces us to make a dramatic change, we become hyper-focused on what's happening, and we're able, it just seems that we're able to do that a lot easier. So this radical behavior, this going out and buying a Ferrari and leaving your wife and finding a new family and doing all this crazy stuff, is really just the inner crisis where change is going to happen best in that chaos for them.
Yeah.
And it's kind of breaking out of that shell, I call it the shell of submission, that socialized shell, and emerging, you know, metamorphosizing, as we said at the beginning, into a new person. Now, generally, those new relationships don't last.
Yeah, that's,
you know,
what I was...
The 20-year-old isn't going to do it for you. But when they wake up and they go, you know what, like, I really don't have anything in common with this person, they usually tend to go back to somebody in their own age group.
Yeah.
Maybe not their family or their wife, but, you know, they wake up and go, no, this is kind of silly.
What about the spouses that are left behind? You mentioned sometimes chaos is forced on you, and obviously in that case it would be, but have you found that sudden life transition from your mate, his so-called or her so-called self-discovery, divorce and abandonment, does that tend to work out well for most people, the spouses left behind? I mean, there's obviously a possibility it could if they face their own midlife metamorphosis.
You've got it, Roy. You know what? For many of them, they stay in pain for a long time. And you know, rejection and hurt and pain that this happened to them. But, you know, if you can get to them and if they can really become self-aware and look at what was going on in their relationship and understand that they weren't really that happy, that they were existing and that, you know, nobody wants to rock the boat, they generally can find that their spouse did them a huge favor. Now, I've met some that are still, you know, years later playing the martyr. And if that's a place they want to stay, then that's just somebody who's stuck. You know, they're just kind of stuck in a theme.
And as you point out, they're in effect making their choice to stay the same, even though they may not admit it. But
right. Because, you know, nobody wants anything forced on them. But at the same time, there are big opportunities. You know, if in the book I talk about the Chinese having two symbols for change. One is danger, one is opportunity.
Oh,
and so the danger is that you get off, you know, you start to make waves. And but the opportunity is within that chaos and that crisis and those waves and that broken marriage comes an opportunity for change and growth and a new beginning and excitement and really a renewal for everybody.
Yeah, I had an experience like that, not in my marriage, but I was in partnership and a business with two other guys, and they walked out on me without warning. I took a long weekend off and came in the next Monday, and my office, the whole office had been cleaned out, and they'd moved
to an
undisclosed location. And but it turned out that I was able to work up a much better arrangement that I enjoyed much more, and they did me a huge favor, as it turned out. But that's, again,
but it takes a while to find that, to see that.
Yeah,
to work your way through the pain and the hurt and the you know, how could they do this to me? I'm such a nice person, right? It takes a while to get through that.
Fortunately, I didn't linger on that because I wasn't all that satisfied with the relationship
there
either.
There you go.
I wouldn't walk out on somebody like that personally, but you know, we all.
Yeah, I mean, there's right ways and wrong ways to do things, and unfortunately, some people just don't know how to do things in a nice way. But I can't remember who the guy was right now. Maybe we can find it. But he wrote a book called The Blame Game, and I interviewed him years ago. And you know, I don't like to blame people. I just like to take charge of myself and what I can do, and what other people do to me. Well, that's just what they do, but that's how I'm going to respond that counts. And there's a chapter in the book where I talk about the difference between responding and reacting, because I used to react to things, and that's really where it's detrimental to you when you react without thought and how other people make you feel. That's a reaction. But when you learn to respond, then you get to choose how they're going to make you feel or how they're not even affecting you, and what you're going to do with what has happened to you in that situation.
We always can't determine what's going to happen to us, but we can always determine how we respond to what happens to us, and that's our choice.
Right. You
and
got
that's
it.
Why I always call it being CEO of you, which is so important.
Exactly. And the board, the members of the board that are in your head, have a good conversation with them.
Yeah. Well, in your book, you urge us not to make radical changes at middle age without some preparatory work. And if we decide our life today is not what we want it to be, where should we look to find our true life? Is it out there somewhere, or is it inside our own heads, or where do we look?
Yeah, it's inside. It's inside us. And it's interesting how many people I do speak to that don't even think to question themselves.
Yeah.
You know, what do you want? When I ask you, what do you want? Usually it's, I don't know. I just want something.
Yeah.
And so I said, well, if I don't know is not an answer, we need an answer. So whether you make up that answer or not, it's probably going to be a metaphor for what you do want. So make something up.
What more important question is there for you to answer than that when you think about it?
Yeah. You know, but I start with easy questions. For instance, if you were, I could wave my magic wand, Roy, would you still be with the same partner? Would you still live in the same area or of the country? Would you move? Would you have the same friends? Would you have the same job? If everything was equal, like don't worry about money or anything like that.
Yeah.
What in your life would you really like to change?
Yeah, that's
and if you start
like
thinking
an exercise
about those things,
I have in my book. If suddenly you won the Powerball lottery jackpot, and you ask yourself not just how you'd spend the money, but what in your life you would change if you didn't have to worry about, where the next paycheck was coming from.
Right, exactly.
How would you change your life? But,
because I honestly, I never do anything for money. I don't make my decisions based on money.
Great.
Because I think money will come. Money will come back to you.
That's so true.
I gave away money for my husband to leave, and I gave, it doesn't matter to me. It's unimportant. What matters is that I'm happy.
Yeah, no.
And
so
people go, oh, it's crazy, you mass all this money, I don't want to give it away. You know, people who think about, I'm going to marry this person, but I'm going to have a contract so they can't take all my money. What does that say? What does that say about the state of your relationship?
That is not a really great relationship.
Exactly. You know, that's just hurtful, I think. And I understand, I built up all my money and money, but that just says that money is now between you two. There's a big wall of money that separates,
Well, what if, like me, for so many years, you look inside for guidance on what you were meant to be or do, and you keep running into roadblocks that shout, you can't do that, or you'll embarrass yourself, or you're not smart enough, or you don't have self-confidence, and you always fail when you try something new. Any suggestions on how we can overcome that silent critic once and for all? Because that's such a problem for so many people, you know, that little voice inside.
Yeah, we've got too silent. Well, I think one of the main things that we have to do is to find, hear the voice. Because sometimes we don't even know that there's a voice ruling the show here.
That's true.
And our voice inside our head doesn't always tell us the truth. We have to understand that. And what's in our subconscious has no moral. It doesn't know right from wrong. It only knows what's been input. And what's been input is what is in the output. So if for your whole life people have been calling you, you know, stupid or slow or clumsy or whatever it is that you now believe, those things aren't necessarily true.
Yeah,
so,
sadly,
first
our
of all,
parents may have been, you know, trying to hold us back from embarrassing or hurting ourselves, and so
or
putting
them.
Limitations on us, and or them. That's a good point.
More probably them.
Yeah.
And so we need to recognize, to first hear that voice, and then find out whose voice is that. So I tell people to listen to music and to start to hear the drums, hear the guitar, separate what you're hearing, hear the bass.
Yeah.
You know, learn to do that. And then when you go to listen to your own thoughts, now you can hear that those distinct voices. And when you hear that voice, that critical voice, and it might not always be the same for whatever's happening, but the thing that you want to know about, let's say, when you hear that critical voice, whose inflection is that? Whose voice do you hear? Is it a parent? Is it a teacher? Is it somebody that you know, a grandparent? You know, because maybe you don't speak that way, but they do. So there's an inflection, there's a way of saying something. And when you recognize that, then you stop and you say, do I, Frankie Picasso, do I believe that about myself?
That's right.
Is that true?
It's so key that you recognize what's holding you back and what where that came from and you know, whether it's valid or not, and 90% of the time it's not.
It's not.
You don't have to accept
that. It's
not
who you are.
Yeah. Well, for all too many of us, our life seems to be going nowhere, and we have nothing meaningful to look forward to, and your book title is Midlife Mojo. What is mojo, and if we feel like we've lost it, can it be regained, or is it gone forever?
Oh, my goodness. Well, mojo is a Congo word, and it means life force. So as long as you're living, it's still there.
Yeah.
And we can breathe, you know, we can put those bellows and push them a little bit
and
raise that flame up of your life, of your life force and that spark inside of you. And, of course, you don't lose your mojo. It just dims a little bit. So it's important that in order to enjoy life, we embrace it a little bit more and push it up, push that fun factor up a little bit. You know, I recently had my father here, and he's 90 years old.
Oh, wow.
And when people meet him, they're always astounded because, first of all, he's got a wife half his age. But he doesn't have a walker. He doesn't have a cane. His brain is like a computer. And, you know, he just went on another world trip for the past 28 days.
Good for him.
And he's still enjoying life. And I go, Dad, like, how is it that you still enjoy doing things that you've done before? Or, you know, most people go, they just get bored with life.
Yeah.
And, you know,
true.
Sometimes, like, they'll call and say, hey, what are you guys doing? Do you want, like, he lives in Mexico. And he goes, you know, do you want to go out? And, like, or no, we're really tired. It's 9 o'clock. We don't want to go out anymore. They're out dancing till midnight. How do you do that at 90? You know, and I think for him the secret is that he has never lived his life backward. He always looks forward.
Yeah,
and life
great.
Is always about really embracing and living it until he's gone.
Yeah, that's
so he never wallows in self-pity or thinks about like his second wife had died. She died, I think, 3 years ago. In November of cancer.
Yeah.
But it took her 3 years to die.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and people were so mad that he moved on. And he goes, I've been mourning her for the last 3 years I've been living with her.
Yeah,
like, the death isn't something that just happened, you know?
No,
it's been happening.
My parents, well, they're both passed now, but they lived in their final years in a retirement village and ended up in the nursing care center area. And it's just amazing the difference between some of the people, like there was one man, 105, that was in assisted living, but not in the actual care center, and how active and alert he was versus some of the other people that, you know, just seemed so tired and worn out. And I heard two ladies discussing each other, and they said, well, we're really not worth much of anything to anybody anymore, are we? And the other one agreed, and I thought, what a sad way to approach life with that kind of an attitude.
It is that. You know, when you think about who they were as these vital human beings and maybe parents and ran killed kids around, and there they are sitting in a facility thinking that nobody cares and there's not just waiting to die. You know, and that's the difference. It's about not waiting to die. It's about still being a vital part of our community, of humanity, while you're here.
Yeah,
and there's always something new to learn, and there's always something new to do.
Oh, yeah,
and,
that's so true.
And I think that that's a really great life lesson.
Yeah. In your book, you talk about underlying automatic commitments, or UACs. Give us an example of a UAC that we need to overcome so that it no longer sabotages.
Well, mine is that I go and get a chocolate bar when I get upset. That's my UAC. So UAC stands for underlying automatic commitment. And as we know, a commitment is a vow or a promise. So a conscious commitment is I want to lose weight. That's a conscious commitment to oneself. But the underlying automatic commitment, the subconscious commitment, the one that we don't always know about, is that when I'm upset, I need some chocolate. It makes me feel better.
Food there.
Yeah, comfort food, whatever it is for me, it's chocolate, let's say. And so that's my go-to. I don't even have to think about it. It's just, you know, there you are at the store picking it up. That's a UAC. And I mean, there can be ones that have more impact than others. But if you find that the things in your life aren't showing up, if you're not getting the job that you want, the raises that you want, the life partner that you want, there, you know, all the big things in your life, if they're not showing up, it's most likely that you have a commitment to a different outcome happening.
Yeah.
And here's another example. When I was in the hospital and the physiotherapist told me, he goes, I want you to move your leg. And I said, I can't move my leg.
Yeah.
And he goes, yes, you can. I want you to move your leg. And I'm like, I can't. And he goes, you can. And I'm like, I can't. And he goes, you can. And finally, I'm in tears going, no, I can't. I can't. And he walked down to the next person, and I'm sitting there, and I'm looking at my leg, and I'm like, move, move, because if you don't move, I'm not going to ever walk again.
Yeah.
And then I realized I'm not moving it because the underlying commitment is it's going to hurt.
Yeah.
It's going to hurt bad, you know? So I my conscience is like, I'm not moving that thing.
Yeah.
But then I realized, you know what, I wanted to walk more than I was afraid of the pain. So I had to move it.
There again, you're analyzing reasons behind rather than just saying I can't do this. You're saying I'm saying this because I'm afraid, and once you pin down those reasons, then you can overcome them. And I think that's really an excellent example. Well, in your book, Midlife Mojo, you present Picasso's formula for success based on the underlying principles think, feel, be, act, and do. Can you expand a little bit on that formula, and what does it mean? As we transform our lives, what is that formula?
Well,
there?
The formula sounds simplistic, but basically Midlife Mojo is a book, it's a prescription for change.
Yeah.
And the first chapter, you know, first few chapters, we think about thinking. Think about who you are. Think about those questions and what it is that you want.
And that's maybe so important. What do we really want out of life before you just go charging willy-nilly to try to accomplish something different.
And so many people are closed off from their feelings. So I want people to feel it, feel what it is that you want, you know?
So
really
important.
Feel what it would feel like if you were to get those things that you want. Well, how would you feel if you became a captain of a ship? Or how would you feel becoming a writer in a magazine? Or how would you feel, you know, making that change to whatever it is that you want to do? Or how would you feel staying the same?
Yeah, but
and then
staying the same, but with a different attitude toward the future rather than, you know, you're forced to do it. I'm in this job because I want to be in this job, not because I have to earn a living, you know.
Right, and so the feel and the be kind of go together, you know, be that person. You know, just really be who it is that you want to be. And then the act, acting, I want people to act as if it's already happened to them.
Yeah,
so that's... go around and dress in the way that a CEO would dress.
Yeah,
you know, present
so
yourself to the world as if you are that person, that character, that, you know, that whoever it is that you want to be.
Because, that's especially important if you're looking for a new job or whatever.
Right.
You know, you picture yourself in that job and what you would accomplish in that job. And then when you sit
exactly.
down for an interview, you really relate so well because, you know, you're on the same wavelength and you know what you're
looking for. And generally speaking, you know, in the sales jobs of the world, people, we model that behavior. We model good behavior and we model the behavior of the person that we're interviewing with. Because when people feel the familiar, they like that. It feels like home. So, you know, just acting as if and pretending and people that, well, pretend. Yeah, you know what? Faking it is as good as making it. And so when we're not there yet, we fake it. And that's okay. You know,
and then
that's
the last
okay.
stage is to just do it.
And do it. You know, like I like to say, people who believe in, you know, the secret or the law of attraction. The faking it is I'm preparing. I'm in the state of perpetual preparation for my new role in life.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be that millionaire. I'm going to be that husband or wife or whatever it is that you want to be in your life.
Yeah.
You know, and go for it and do it. And Nike said it, just do it.
Well, especially in our late 50s and 60s, many of us begin to ponder our mortality. Is death something we should fear, or does death mark the end of our existence, or should we embrace it as a welcome next stage?
Well, I think that's a personal choice, but I as a metaphysical hypnotherapist, and I do past life regression, I definitely believe that death is not the end. I do believe that we're all going somewhere else, and it's a great place to go. And
yeah,
I hope I'm right, and I do believe I'm right. But
several programs on that. You know, from even one couple with a professional or a private investigator who investigates a lot of aspects of the afterlife.
That's right. What do you think, Roy?
I certainly believe that, you know, we all have souls that sent us here for a purpose and that
that
death is far from the end. Whether I believe in reincarnation or not, I don't know. I certainly think we should be open to all kinds of possibilities because that
whether there is or you don't, you know, death is not. I don't think death is the final step, but I do believe that if you don't learn the lessons that you're supposed to learn here, you're going to have to do some of this work again.
That's very
true. So, you know, the more open people are to finding out who they are.
Yeah,
and really, it's all about you. I say in the book, you know, we come in here to this world alone, and we leave it alone.
Yeah.
So I can't live my life for somebody else. I have to live it for me.
That's such a good point, sometimes,
you know, people are in our lives for a reason, a season, a lifetime. Sometimes we have to hurt people that we love if we're not having the life that we're supposed to have, and you know, we're sorry for that. But
we're really not doing somebody else a favor by living a life solely for them because we're enjoying our own life, we're not probably being much of a resource for anybody else.
Exactly.
Well, let's talk about your book, Midlife Mojo, How to Get Through the Midlife Crisis and Emerge as Your True Self. And you emphasize it's not just for passive reading, but it's meant as a participatory book. And is it essential that you perform the exercises to get the maximum out of your book?
Well, I think yes. I think if you do the exercises, you're going to benefit more than if you don't. The book is pragmatic and it is spiritual, and I think it'll appeal to both mindsets. If you don't believe in the woo-woo, you're still going to get out of the book because of the hard, you know, work that you get to do on yourself in the book. And if you do believe in the spiritual, then maybe you'll get a little different insight into who you are and why you're here and the exercises that are in the book. But
well, where do
the
we
question,
go to?
Sorry.
I was just going to ask, go ahead, but I just then want to ask where we go to preview and purchase Midlife Mojo because it sounds like a book that a lot of folks would be interested
in. Well, I thank you for that. People can go to Amazon, ca.com, UK, wherever you live in the world, it's available to you.
Yeah.
It's available at Barnes & Noble online. It's available. But most people know Amazon.
Yeah.
And it, there's an e-copy as well as a hard copy.
You can
get either or both.
And do you have a website address as well, where I know you have some other resources that people can
Folks can come and visit me at unstoppablefrankiepicasso.com. And these days I'm really working on the Good Radio Network, which is my project in future. And that is about, if I might take a moment to talk about it, the Good Radio Network is a socially conscious radio station that I'm creating where people currently, I'm talking to people who have asked themselves, what can I do to change the world, even if I'm one person? And that's kind of where the concept started, and we're growing, and I'll be adding new hosts to it. But basically, we're looking at going beyond talk into doing, because I believe in that. So really helping those people that we're talking to, finding projects that we can build on either financially or with in-kind promotion, or helping them in other ways by introduction. And so it's really important to me that it's positive and it stays positive, that people have an alternative to negative news and stories, and that we help people
in the
process.
Plenty of those available, those negative news stories.
Yeah, they're available everywhere.
You don't need any more of those.
Let's give them something different.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, as the unstoppable Frankie Picasso points out, if your life without purpose, what I call sleepwalking through life, you are in fact making a choice to accept things the way they are, and you're choosing a life lacking in fulfillment, joy, and purpose, constantly striving to maintain an unsatisfactory status quo, and you're really not doing yourself or anyone else any good with that approach. So why not choose instead to discover the life that, to live out the life that you have created to have, and you can become the unstoppable you. And I recommend you preview Frankie Picasso's book, Midlife Mojo. And while you're at it, preview my book, A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, because we have a lot of the similar approaches, but a lot different approaches. It'd be very complimentary to read both those books. And you can purchase
mine. I look forward to reading your book.
Purchase it at middleagerenewal.com if you want to find out more about that. But and thank you so much, Frankie. I think definitely we have the same purpose in mind, and best of success with your new radio network.
I thank you so much for this opportunity, Roy, and I wish you all the best with you and in your radio show and your book.
I think we're on the same team. Let's move forward.
I think we are.
And get everybody to really enjoy the life, because that's what we were meant to do when we were put on this earth. So thank you so much, Frankie, and bye-bye for now.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, hosted by Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of both A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, and Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines. You can learn more about Roy and his Middle Age Renewal Training System by visiting his website, middleagerenewal.com.